Hear from Portland Film Fest director Josh Leek about highlights of next month's 2014 festival. But first, join Teresa Mitchell for an hour-long press watch with the news you're not supposed to know. That is coming up next on KBOO.
Tune into Between the Covers every Thursday at 11 a.m. to hear interviews with locally and nationally known authors from both fiction and nonfiction. Between the Covers, only on KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio and Sante Aesthetics and Wellness are proud to co-sponsor A Touch of Portland 2014, an exploration in healing. Saturday, August 16th, from noon to 8 p.m. A Touch of Portland is a KBOO benefit that focuses on the healing arts. It gives participants a chance to sample multiple healing modalities in a comfortable setting. This year will be a block party on Northwest 17th between Davis and Everett. It will feature organic food from local restaurateurs and 8 hours of music broadcast live. We will have multiple modalities of massage, acupuncture, shiatsu, and more. That's Saturday, August 16th from 12 to 8 p.m. A Touch of Portland, an exploration in healing. For more information, go to kboo.fm under events.
This is Press Watch, a weekly counter-propaganda and left opinion program here on your people-supported free radio station, KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. Join me for a brief peek behind the video veil of Monopoly media manipulation and an examination of the news you're not supposed to know. That's like an examination of the news you're supposed to know. I'm laughing because I'm in here in the KBOO studio and our mics here and our equipment is much loved because we have people coming in all the time. And so let's see, I adjusted the isolator rubber on the mic and I adjusted the screw that holds it in position at the top. And I slid it over to the standing position, whereupon the bolt that that allows it to swivel at its base fell out. And now it's all been put back together. And thank you for your contributions to KBOO Radio. They keep our equipment, equipped. This is Press Watch, the news you're not supposed to know. I want to start with, we have an hour today, and I hope that you will call in and make your comments and questions about, well, what's going on in the world. But first I want to start with local news. Large oil trains continue to be seen rolling through the Portland metro area. I guess I just wanted to call it the Petro Mortland area this week. Hopefully it won't be that. Particularly through the Union Pacific Yards near North Greeley Avenue. And in other local news, radiation nearly doubled during the rain in Portland yesterday. At my residence, it was up to 25 counts per minute. From usual 12 to 14, often as low as 6 counts per minute. An Oregon wildfire complex, the Carlton Complex, is now at a 250,000 acres, 400 square miles being fought by 2,500 people. We have serious wildfires here in Oregon. The fire has burned about 150 homes and is blamed for one death after a man was trying to haul water and dig a fire line to protect his home and his heart gave out. Poor guy. Right now, according to the Oregonian, And the latest I have is slightly more than half contained. Two other major fires, Oregonian writes, are burning in north central Washington. There's one near Leavenworth that has burned 12,000 acres, only 10% contained. And I guess that refers to the perimeter around the fire. Anyway, Mills Canyon fire remains at 22,000 acres, and they've got that almost contained, 90%. Meanwhile, in Oregon, a band of thunderstorms moving across Oregon sparked dozens of new wildfires. And there were 19,000 lightning strikes from Tuesday through Wednesday. And a lot of rain accompanied many of the storms, they write. So it's not clear how many of these new starts may grow into large fires. And in Perry local news, there's also wildfires in Washington and quite a bit in Canada. 153 firefighters from across Canada have arrived in British Columbia as the province braces for more hot, dry weather that could send the wildfire danger soaring. This is according to Huffington Post. They write, the Ministry of Forests says 100 sustained action firefighters and 100, and additional single specialists from Ontario, Manitoba, and New Brunswick have been briefed in Kamloops, British Columbia, and assigned to fires throughout the province. The new teams will spell off crews that have been working on roughly 15 large or potentially threatening blazes. Newly arriving crews will have to endure about 48 hours of wet and wicked weather as a powerful storm is forecast to bring torrential rain. I guess that's good news for them. More than 2,000 BC fire crews have been bolstered by 750 local contractors and 350 out-of-province firefighters battling blazes in conditions considering the driest in more than half a century. And in your mind, you might want to put that in the category of things that throw soot onto the remaining ice in the Arctic. Now I want to turn to international news. No, before I do that, let me give you a Jim Crow update here in Portland. I got an email from Dan Handelman of Portland Cop Watch, and I'll just quote it. The title is Longtime Police Accountability Group Denied Meeting with Mayor. And this email is really pretty much about arrogance, and it's about not giving a damn, and it's clearly about the Jim Crow drug war. But Dan writes, Portland Cop Watch, or an organization promoting police accountability since 1992, has been denied a meeting with Mayor and Police Commissioner Charlie Hales after 3 months of back and forth with his scheduler and police liaison. Although the group has met with every chief and mayor since its creation, the current commissioner seems to be shutting out the organization after meeting with them a year ago on July 22nd, 2013. Portland Cop Watch is known for doing its homework and has representatives on several official city committees over the years dealing with police oversight and racial profiling. I'm going to depart from the emails, text, and say this is very true. Portland Cop Watch and Dan Handelman certainly does his homework. He's also very respectful and very courteous to the point. Let me tell you, if you don't know, if you did not have a Dan Handelman in this town, things would be even more hellish with the police department. He's what we've got, and he's a good man. He's been working hard for many, many years on this and on other related issues. And the idea that he's being shut out is, well, it's kind of disgusting, but I'll return to the text here. Portland Cop Watch also brought attention to the Joint Terrorism Task Force issue in late 2000 when Mayor Hales was city commissioner and eventually was the only member to vote against renewing Portland's collaboration with the FBI. While other groups, such as Airbnb, Buy Time with the Mayor, Portland Cop Watch, an all-volunteer nonprofit educational group, gets no such deference. The email thread beginning with April request has been posted at portlandcopwatch.org. And gives a list of how many times they tried to contact Hales. And he writes, for context about the request from the mayor's police liaison, Officer Dina Wesson Mitchell, note that Portland Cop Watch was vocal upon her hiring that an insider from the bureau would be able to rejoin the force at any time is not the appropriate person to be liaison between community and the police. Portland Cop Watch stands by this analysis. In the midst of the ongoing anti-homeless policies, revive crackdowns to target gangs, read in Portland as all African-American young men the police see. More shootings of people in mental health crisis despite the pending Department of Justice settlement agreement. And the overturning of two egregious policy violations by Captain Mark Krueger, departing from the text, Captain Mark, the confirmed Nazi Krueger. The group, he writes, is hoping that public pressure will help convince the mayor it's time to sit down and talk police accountability. So, the number for the mayor's office is 503-823-4120, and I suggest give him a call and ask him what's up with this Officer Dina Wesson Mitchell. Tell him if they want a Mitchell on the police accountability group there. How about Teresa Mitchell? Hey, I'm a Mitchell. I'd be happy to be on that. I'll do it for free. Come on. Charlie Hales, 503-823-4120. And I won't be joining the police force. All right, turning to international news. The bombing of the world's largest open-air prison goes on. Israel may be committing war crimes in Gaza, according to the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, speaking in Geneva. Navi Pillay said house demolitions and the killing of children raise strong possibilities that Israel is violating international law. This is from Russia Today, who I turn to when I want something that doesn't have anything to do with Russia directly. Opening an emergency debate, they write, at UN Human Rights Council in Geneva, she cited several cases of Israeli airstrikes and shelling hitting houses and hospitals in the coastal enclave, and said these are just a few examples where there seems to be a strong possibility that international human law has been violated in a manner that could amount to war crimes. She hit out at both sides concerning their conduct during the conflict. Now it's in its third week, having started on July 8th. Hundreds of Palestinians, mostly civilians and children, have died in the conflict, including a 7-year-old hit by a shell in Gaza. Early on Wednesday, according to Reuters, the Israeli army has been accused of targeting civilian areas, as well as using flechette shells during its offensive in Gaza. Now, I want to depart from what RT wrote there and explain to you what is up with flechette shells and why it puts the lie to all this bunk about how careful the Israeli army is. In the first place, Gaza is a walled-off area. It's got a 20-foot wall, can't go in, can't go out, unless you go and beg the Israeli government, and they are not sympathetic to you if you happen to be a Palestinian Arab. And inside this compound, which has about, I mean, the whole thing is pretty small and has about the density of Philadelphia. They've gone in with tanks, and they say, oh, this is necessary because Palestinians have been launching rockets at them. I don't want to get into that too much. Except to say, yeah, they have been. And I wonder what else they have left to them. These rockets have killed very few people. They're very ineffective as offensive weaponry. And, the rockets. But anyway, I want to tell you what flechette shells are. Flechette shells, in the case they're talking about, these are large tank shells that go into these giant, multiply armored Merkava tanks. And they are big, and man, they are heavy. And you had best be doing your weight training if you want to load one of these things. Fortunately, for the Israeli soldiers, they don't have to load them directly. Someone else does that, and an automatic system crams it into the breech in the tank. And when they fire it, a flechette shell, well, that's not a shell that you use to blast a hole into a building like the ones that they shot up school with today. More on that in just a minute. Flechette shells are made to massacre people. And if they were used on battlefield where you had an approaching army, you'd better believe when a flechette shell comes your way, anybody who's not already in a tank is going to get killed if they're in the way of the blast. And the blast, it's not a narrow pinpoint thing. This ain't no surgical strike. When a flechette shell is fired, it makes a huge swath, like almost a football field wide and several football fields long, and it's basically a nail bomb. It's full of flechettes, full of little nails, And it's made for ripping people apart, and it certainly does. And so if you're trying to strike the military within the context of civilians, never a good idea. Never okay, but if that were indeed what you were doing, you would never take a flechette shell to the battle. Nor would you use white phosphorus, but Israel has. Nor would you use depleted uranium. I wonder if people know what depleted uranium means. It's not depleted in any sense except that it's not usable any longer for fission in the reactor where it came from. Depleted uranium is poisonous uranium that's been taken out of reactors. Yeah, it's that. Unbelievable, but true. And made into bullets, and when you fire depleted uranium, we have all these wonderful advantages. It's heavier than lead, so it penetrates bodies, tanks. It catches fire in air. It's pyrophoric. So when you hit bodies, they burn up. This was approvingly called crispy critters during the U.S. imperial invasions of Iraq and Afghanistan. And then the other advantage is that it goes on poisoning the population for 20,000 years. Isn't that great? I noticed that one of the women who gave birth to a child that died during the massacre of civilians in Gaza had given birth to a two-headed baby. And this is what happens in areas where depleted uranium has been used, and Israel has been using it, obviously. Not just from that indicator in Gaza over their past several conflicts. Going back to the article, 29 Israeli soldiers have been killed. That's a little out of date, including a tank officer who was sniped down by a Palestinian as he popped out of his Merkava yesterday. Every one of these incidents, UN High Commissioner Pillay said in some of her strongest comments on the carnage, must be properly and independently investigated. She also condemned the indiscriminate firing of rockets and mortars by Palestinian militants into Israel and expressed concern at the rise of incitement for violence against Palestinians by Israelis on social media. By the way, a reason that I come down so hard on this is because, well, it's the same reason that I like to come down hard on the North Koreans. I come down hard on the North Koreans in part because they slime the name of socialists. They don't understand what socialism is. They think it has something to do with obeying. And I often think of my Jewish relatives. And I am not self-hating. I just hate this. So, I have an announcement that is related. I'll remind you before I say it that this is not a call to action. This is an announcement. There's something going on. It is a rally in Pioneer Square starting at 6 p.m. today to stop the Israeli massacre in Gaza this evening in Portland. At 6:45, there will be a march with stops along the way at stores targeted for boycott, divestment, and sanction. BDS, look that up. Boycott, divest, sanction. Why not join the list of the people the NSA wants to look at carefully? Look it up. Boycott, divest, sanction, BDS. At 7:45, the march will return to Pioneer Square. There will also be a bike swarm for Palestine and a freedom ride for Palestine that will circle Pioneer Square. And here's some more information on it. Pardon me. This from Sarah Swetzoff. Today, Thursday, July 24th, Portlanders will come together at 6 p.m. in Pioneer Courthouse Square to protest Israel's Operation Protective Edge. The combination aerial assault and ground invasion has now killed over 700 Gazans. At least 170 of the dead are children, with the U.S. donating more than $3 billion of military aid each and every year. The blood is on American hands. We demand an immediate end to the U.S. funding of the Israeli war machine and the lifting of the siege on Gaza. And speaking for myself, this is our gig. I mean, the flights from U.S. to Ben-Gurion and back are constant. Israel is very much a U.S. gig. And we do have blood on our hands. Returning to the press release, a four-part protest will incorporate a Freedom Ride car caravan, a bike swarm, a rally, and a march downtown in order to maximize participation and visibility. At the rally, students and community members will speak out about their personal experiences as Gazans, Palestinians, and Portlanders who support the Palestinian right to live with justice and equality in their homeland. March scheduled to coincide with the National Day of Action and follows on the heels of three previous protests here in Portland. So more information on that. 202-256-1101. That's 202-256-1101. That's Sarah. You're listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. The number to call with your comments or questions, 503-231-8187. 503-231-8187. I have some more breaking news, by the way, if you haven't heard. Air Algeria flight has gone down, and when I went into to KBOO this morning, I still didn't know exactly where it had gone down or why, although the speculation at this point is that it was bad weather rather than a rocket or something. And before I go to Ken, let me just give you this update from Gaza City. A strike on a UN shelter in Gaza today has killed and injured multiple people. That's according to the United Nations spokesman. The coordinates of the UN school, which was serving as a shelter for families in Gaza, had been given to the Israeli military. Spokesman Chris Guinness tweeted that coordinates of the shelter in Beit Hanun had been provided to the Israeli army before the strike as a precaution, an effort to prevent a strike on it. And the UN tried twice to coordinate with the Israelis to evacuate the shelter ahead of the strike. Guinness posted precise coordinates of the UNRWA shelter in Beit Hanun had been formally given to the Israeli army, and then minutes later tweeted, over the course of the day, the UNRWA tried to coordinate with the Israeli army a window for civilians to leave, and it was never granted. And then the Israeli Defense Forces released a statement about the strike, saying that it is in the midst of combat with Hamas terrorists in the area of Beit Hanun. That's what you are if you shoot back, by the way. You're a terrorist. And Ken's on the air. Hi, Ken.
Good morning, Teresa.
Good morning.
And about bombing the UN building there,
uh-huh.
That happened in 2006 in Lebanon as well. If you recall, there was a UN observer station, and in exactly the same circumstance that the Israelis had been given their geographic coordinates, and they kept coming closer and closer, and the observers screamed and yelled, "Hey, you know, where are the UN?" And they finally got hit. In the same year, Israeli military managed to put down some shells precisely on top of ambulances which had red crosses painted on their roof. I don't know if you remember that as well, but the shells entered the ambulances right at the intersection of the lines of the Red Cross.
Yeah, it's precision strike until you hear something like that, and then it's whoops.
Yeah, it was a mistake. Now, the reason I called was because you were talking about flechettes.
Yes.
And my understanding is that there's also a weapon called a dime, which stands for dense inert metal explosive. Are you familiar with that?
The tungsten weapon, yeah.
And according to Mads Gilbert, the Norwegian doctor who is treating his Palestinians, that the metal parts become microscopic, and they cleanly sever limbs, and they create wounds that are impossible to deal with because of the nature of it. And I think that. Is there a distinction between the flechettes that you refer to and the dime weapons?
Yes, these are two different things. Unless they're, you know, putting tungsten in the nails now, no reason they wouldn't be. But as far as I know, flechettes are flechettes.
Yeah. Okay. Before I leave, I just want to say I love your program. Number one, number two, I know that you always cite the many websites you go to, and I just want to recommend one to you.
All right.
If you're unfamiliar with it, it's called Wall Street on Parade.
Wall Street on Parade.
Yeah.
.org.
And it's gee, I'm not sure.
Well, it's okay. It can be found with a search engine.
Anyway, it's run by a lady that has the same kind of credentials as Catherine Austin Fitz. She's worked as a stockbroker, and it's a pretty terrific website. So thanks a lot, Teresa.
Thanks for that.
Right. Bye-bye.
Well, I'm going to do something I don't normally do on air. I'm going to move this mic stand. Warning to the engineer. All right, then. I had a little argument with gravity yesterday. I decided to launch myself onto my face as I was running, ironically, for a bus. I'm a bus driver by trade, and I left a hilarious kissy print on the sidewalk. And I wish I'd been able to keep my head when I fell on my face, because I've always wanted to be able to say under such circumstances, it's okay, I broke the fall with my face. Anyway, my face is fine. Sidewalk, I'm not so sure. But my knees, they took a banging. That's what happens when you're 56 years old and you go launching yourself onto concrete. So I'm going to sit down for the rest of this show and invite your calls. 503-231-8187. 503-231-8187. Been talking about the fact that there is a protest today in Portland starting at 6 and 7 o'clock. I have the details over on pieces of paper to my right here. Let me see. And that is to protest the U.S. involvement in the Gaza massacre. And Jim's on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm sure it's no secret that Israel and the United States are joined at the hip. And foreign policy of one is the foreign policy of the other. And some of the top-ranking neocons in our government have dual Israeli and United States citizenship. This is a fact. Also, I'm beginning to recognize how German citizens in the Reich must have felt watching newsreels of the Wehrmacht and the Luftwaffe destroy the Warsaw Ghetto. And I'm also reminded of George Orwell depicting a scene during Hate Week where the people are viewing a film showing a helicopter dropping a grenade into a lifeboat with a woman and child and blowing them to bits and everyone cheering. We have perpetual war. We have perpetual surveillance. We're probably so inured to such atrocities that we'll probably be on our way to Hate Week soon enough. Well,
I'd say we're already there if you look at CNN coverage, Fox News coverage.
I have to leave, and Teresa, I salute you. You do a wonderful job. Carry on.
Thanks for calling. Okay, and someone's going to call and say, Godwin's Law, so okay, go ahead and do it. Number to call, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. Before I go to the next caller, I thought I'd pass on the secret government rule book for labeling you a terrorist, because you just got labeled a terrorist if you looked up some of the things that I've been talking about. And speaking of calls for action, actually, I will call for you to look things up for yourself, to find many and international sources and make your own mind up about this sort of thing. That's the sort of action that Fox News pretends to support, but they continually, well, they deliver their propaganda and polemics and will not label it as such. I am giving you counter-propaganda and my polemics, and I admit that's what I'm doing, so I invite you to figure it out for yourself. But Jeremy Scahill and Ryan Devereaux wrote that the Obama administration has quietly approved a substantial expansion of the terrorist watch list system. Yeah, substantial expansion of the terrorist watch list system, authorizing a secret process that requires neither concrete facts nor irrefutable evidence to designate an American or a foreigner as a terrorist, according to a key government document obtained by The Intercept. And this is published at The Intercept. You can look that up and find Scahill and Devereaux's stuff. And they write, the March 2013 watch listing guidance, a 166-page document issued last year by the National Counterterrorism Center, spells out the government's secret rules for putting individuals on its main terrorist database, as well as the no-fly list and the selectee list, which triggers enhanced screening at airports and border crossings. The new guidelines allow individuals to be designated as representatives of terror organizations without any evidence. that they are actually connected to such organizations, and it gives a single White House official the unilateral authority to place entire categories of people the government is tracking onto the no-fly and selectee lists. It broadens the authority of government officials to nominate people to the watch list based on what is vaguely described as fragmentary information. It also allows for dead people to be watch-listed. So there you go. That's the zombie apocalypse. The U.S. has got your back on that. Well, you have to laugh, don't you? I mean, this sort of thing, I won't say it's unbelievable, but it's certainly appalling, isn't it? Over the years, Scahill and Devereaux write, the Obama and Bush administrations have fiercely resisted disclosing the criteria for placing names on databases, though the guidelines are officially labeled as unclassified. In May, Attorney General Eric Holder even invoked the state secrets privilege to prevent watch listing guidelines from being disclosed in litigation launched by an American who was on the no-fly list. In an affidavit, Holder called them a clear roadmap to the government's terrorist tracking apparatus, adding, the watch listing guidance, although unclassified, contains national security information that, if disclosed, could cause significant harm to national security. So it caused your mind to kind of buzz. Significant harm to national security. The rule book, which The Intercept is publishing in full, was developed behind closed doors by representatives of the nation's intelligence, military, and law enforcement establishment, including the Pentagon, CIA, NSA, and FBI. Emblazoned with the crests of 19 agencies, it offers the most complete and revealing look into the secret history of the government's terrorist policies to date. It reveals a confounding and convoluted system filled with exceptions to its own rules and relies on the elastic concept of reasonable suspicion as standard for determining whether someone is a possible threat. Because the government tracks suspected terrorists as well as known terrorists, individuals can be watchlisted if they are suspected of being a suspected terrorist or if they are suspected of associating with people who are suspected of terrorism activity. Well, I want to say, departing from this text, I want to say after all these years, gosh, how long has it been? I started doing Press Watch